As I sat there, I was trying to think of where to start the story. So I'll start when I was attending college in Southern California. And I lived in a black neighborhood off of Adams and Western. And in those neighborhoods, you have all kinds of people living next to you. There were these two guys in the house next door. They were drug dealers, and they called me College Boy. How you doing, College Boy? And they thought it was stupid for me to attend college. And, of course, I thought it was stupid for them to be drug dealers, but I wouldn't dare tell them that. So we got along. They were also members of the Black Panther Party, if any of you remember. And they sold copies of the little red book, Mao Zedong's little red book, you know, those quotations. And over the years, I always wondered about the connection between the Black Panther Party and Mao Zedong. So I retired from teaching secondary schools, and I went back to university to trace that connection between the Black Panther Party and Mao Zedong. And in so doing, I did a little research, and my research took me to those members of the Black Panther Party who hijacked planes and went to Cuba. And remember those hijackings, they changed the way, you know, airplanes were set up. They put locks, you know, on the doors to the pilot's cabin. And we did finally did a treaty with Cuba to end the hijackings when the hijackers discovered that they would be returned to the U.S. So anyway, in my research, I was writing my dissertation about those surviving Panthers who live in Havana today. So in 2010, I got permission from the State Department through the university to go to Havana and find them. And there are about four or five who are still alive. And it took me a couple of years. Nowadays, I hear it's fairly easy. It was fairly easy then for some folk. But it took me a couple of years to get permission and get funding to go down there and to find people who knew how I could contact these former Panthers. So I flew to Cancun after I got my permission, and from Cancun to Havana. So after this 2 years of trying to, you know, going through all jumping these hoops to get permission, I'm waiting there at the airport in Cancun, and there are about these 30 or so American kids. You know, I say kids in their 20s, and noisy and drinking. And so I say, so what are you guys doing here? I said, we're going to Havana. I said, do you have permission? Oh, we don't need that shit. All you have to do is pay $30 and get a visa and you can go. And it's like, okay. And they all went without permission from the State Department, without permission from anyone, and they were all over Havana. But of course, it would have been my luck if I had done that. I would have been the one who got caught, $5,000 fine, time in prison. But more about my trip and finding those people. So I knew the location, and I had studied communism. I'm a historian, and in undergrad school, my specialization was history of the Soviet Union. So when I got off the plane, you know, I leave Cancun, which is pretty rich, and I land in Havana, and the contrast itself was sobering. I go from the colors of Cancun to greens and grays, the buildings, uniforms, those little caps that they were Soviet uniforms. That's what they were. And everybody had guns and courteous. Nobody smiled, though. And you were given instructions and you followed them. And you were made aware all of the time that the U.S. did not have diplomatic relations with Cuba. And if you got into trouble there, you were on your own. So I stayed at this hotel, and the second or third day there, I went to this place where I was supposed to meet one of the Panthers who'd been there since the 70s. He shot a policeman in New Mexico, he and a couple of his friends. He'd been there since the 70s, so I went to this cafe where he hangs out, and I started asking questions. And I was supposed to come back the next day, and I did, and there were several policemen in the place when I came back, and that was kind of the way things went. The closer I got to the people I was supposed to see, the more police scrutiny I came under. The hotels, there was only one way in. They had back doors, but the back doors were always locked. Every time I left, I was followed. I got the phone numbers and the addresses of the four or five people that I was trying to locate. I called them after I got back into the U.S. because I stayed there for 4 weeks, and by the time I left, I wasn't sure that I would be able to leave. And the longer I stayed, the more tense it became. And so that was my road trip.